The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers.
Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome, everyone, to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good day, Ed.
Good day, eh? And Chris Woodward, who's going to be our news guy this morning. Good morning to you, Chris.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Well, we always say this, and I don't know that it's going to stop anytime soon. We've been saying it probably since the Obama administration. No dead space when it comes to news.
No
breaks. We've talked about, Fred, in the early days of the AFA report with Brother Don Wildman, and we would scratch and scrape and look under bushels and trying to find news to talk about.
Yeah.
And now we're just flooded with it.
Yes.
All kinds of things happening over the weekend. And since we last had our news show, now we had, I'm talking about Today's Issues, we had Trivia Friday on Friday, special edition of that. But since we last had this program, Today's Issues, on Thursday, Chris, things have opened up and heated up in the Middle East.
Yes, the news cycle is why I look 75.
You don't look 75.
Yes, it's been a very busy period, certainly something that we need to continue to be in prayer about, and I'll get to that in a second. For those that, for whatever reason, have no idea what's happened in the last 4 or 5 days, a war has broken out between Israel and Iran. Israel started this back on Thursday, our time, because they were concerned that Iran was close to having a nuclear weapon. Iran has for years now, going back to the Obama administration's first term, Iran has been doing research to try to develop a nuclear weapon. People say it's for nuclear energy, but other people beg to differ, saying Iran is only interested in a weapons-only nuclear program. Israel was of the opinion last Thursday that Iran was the closest it has ever been to a nuclear weapon, and therefore we have to strike. So Israel, in a very well-coordinated, well-planned, well-carried-out attack on Iran, did send a barrage of rockets and other things that destroyed a lot of Iran's infrastructure that would be used to, God forbid, fire a nuclear missile at Israel. And they took out a lot of things. And that was the story in much of our discussion on Friday morning. Once we got to Friday afternoon, the story changed because Iran then retaliated. And initially, they sent some drones that Israel quickly took out. No threat here. You guys aren't going to do anything. And then they started shooting a lot of missiles at Israel, specifically big cities like Tel Aviv. And unfortunately, some of those missiles did hit places in Tel Aviv. For those that maybe didn't see it, you can Google it today, but Fox's Trey Yingst was on top of a building, as he normally is, reporting for Fox News. He backs away from the camera, and he starts telling his cameraman, zoom in, zoom out, you can see the Iron Dome taking out Iran's missiles. But then some of those missiles started to make it past the Iron Dome and were actually hitting buildings and injuring people. Some people have died in the exchange of missiles since then. It has been a very tumultuous time, and we have a ton of sound here. I'll play one thing, and then we can get your guys' thoughts. Let's hear from Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu over the weekend talking about why Israel made the decision to launch this effort against Iran now. Clip one.
Because we were facing an imminent threat, a dual existential threat. One, the threat of Iran rushing to weaponize their enriched uranium to make atomic bombs, with a specific and declared intent to destroy us. Second, a rush to increase their ballistic missile arsenal.
Well, Fred, lots of different issues in this, all kinds of different things we can discuss. You can talk about the efficacy of the Iron Dome, which, generally speaking, works very well. These are basically missile against missile defenses. We have the Patriot missile system and other types of systems like that. But they provide that protection, but you're going to get missiles through if there's enough of them. We could talk about that. We could talk about whether or not Iran, how close they were to having a nuclear weapon. But the first thing I want to talk about with you, Fred, is the existential threat that Benjamin Netanyahu mentioned is this, that Iran has made it clear they intend to wipe Israel off the face of the earth.
Correct.
And so this long-term project of trying to get the capability to produce weapons is not just – I've seen people on social media saying, well, Israel supposedly has nuclear weapons. The U.S. does. Russia, China, France, you know, England, the U.K. Why can't Iran? Well, because Iran has – already said what they intend to do with theirs.
Yeah, exactly. There have been reports over the weekend that this attack that Israel initiated was kind of Friday morning, roughly, has been in the planning for about 10 years because Iran, as you say, has been making those threats for many, many years. And we want to also make it clear right off the top, there is a difference between the Iranian people and the Islamic regime that runs that country.
Right.
There are some wonderful people amongst the Iranian folks.
They Increasing
number of Christians. I found one of the first speeches that Prime Minister Netanyahu made after initiating the attack was, I want to speak to the Iranian people. And I'm paraphrasing to a certain extent, but Netanyahu said to the Iranian people, we, Israel, are with you. There is a belief that given the resources, the encouragement enough, that the Iranians, for the most part, would take out that Islamic regime. They don't want to live the way the Islamic regime has taken that country.
Right.
So, but also Israel knows as long as that Islamic regime is there, because I don't think they've tried to hide the fact that they are developing and want to develop nuclear weapons. In fact, in recent months, you have had from President Trump, you have had the talk that we are encouraging, we want a deal, we want insurance. That from Iran, that they are not going to develop their uranium to the point where they could have a nuclear weapon. So, and President Trump had given them 60 days. We even had reports that there was a discussion between Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Trump 2 or 3 weeks ago, a tense discussion, it was reported, that Trump was telling Israel, do not carry out any attacks. But then just about 8 days ago, there was another conversation between Netanyahu and President Trump, and the readout from that conversation was very quiet.
Yeah.
And so I think the decision was made that they were going to carry out this attack finally, because they believed Netanyahu, I think in an interview with Fox on the weekend, was saying, we had intelligence that told us that the Iranians were at the very point of enriching uranium that it could turn into a nuclear weapon. We could not wait any longer. And he said the problem is Iran develops a nuclear weapon, but they would also share it with Hamas and Hezbollah.
Yeah, that complicates things.
Yeah. Well, Israel right now is fighting Houthi rebels in Yemen.
Yeah.
They've got Iran. They still have elements of Hamas and Hezbollah and some, I think they said there was like five fronts they were working on. So they launched this report, this attack. Here's what's really fascinating to me. Mossad, which is Israel's CIA.
Right.
Their intelligence agency.
Probably the best intelligence agency in the world.
Right.
All right. No insult to our CIA. But the Mossad just has a reputation.
Yeah.
we were told that Mossad set up a drone base in Iran weeks, even months ago.
Inside Iran.
Inside Iran.
Yeah.
Amongst the first casualties when the war broke out on Friday, the initial casualties were the top military leaders in Iran, the top scientists who were developing the nuclear weapons, and then over the weekend, they took out their top intelligence people in Iran. In the initial attacks, they took out some of these generals and some of these scientists when they were in bed at 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
They knew where they were. That's got to be pretty scary.
Right.
If you're a leader in Iran right now, they know where you are. There was also reports that Mossad had pretty well infiltrated some of the upper echelons. They have the ability to look like an Iranian, to speak the language without any accents.
Right.
I mean, this is the way Mossad operates. And so they started this. Now, no surprise that by Friday afternoon, Iran was responding to this. Of course, it was nighttime in Israel. I think what happened was Israel was ready for a response, but not to the extent initially.
Right.
Which is why, and Iran, by the way, is targeting civilian targets inside of Israel. Israel is keeping its targets to its military, Iran's military.
And to the scientific enterprises that are developing a bomb.
Yes, mm-hmm. Underneath.
Yep.
Now, what we are told is that this war is going to go on for a while because Israel is having to do multiple sorties with their fighter jets. Because a lot of the uranium is being developed in facilities far below ground.
Right.
And so they have to go in over and over again and bomb these facilities. This morning, the Israeli jets took off, and they were targeting the missile launchers that were being carried around on the back of trucks. And the Israeli Air Force even released a video this morning showing, you know, the drones target. They basically put an X on a truck,
right,
and you see the bomb hitting it. So that's what's going on right now. So Israel is trying to take out the missile launchers, which should diminish Iran's ability to launch attacks into Israel. The other element in this is, you know, the question may be from our listeners, is the U.S. involved? The answer to that is yes. Apparently, the United States already has been helping to knock out some of the missiles coming in to Israel. And we have moved destroyers into the eastern part of the Mediterranean. There may be a carrier group that's probably in the Persian Gulf somewhere, right, as far as we know. And we're also being told this morning that fighter jets are being positioned, whatever that means.
Our bases in the region.
To be available to take a more offensive.
Yes, because at this point, our involvement is defensive in nature, protecting
yes.
Israel from the missile launches.
That is correct. Now, we have to say, you know, that missiles hit the neighborhood, but also the U.S. consulate in Tel Aviv, not the embassy in Jerusalem, but the consulate in Tel Aviv, one of the missiles hit in that vicinity. And our ambassador, Mike Huckabee, is warning people just to stay away from these areas. I'm not sure the Iranians are targeting, but President Trump has certainly said that if the Iranians decide to attack our bases, whether it's in Baghdad or whatever the case may be, that the Iranians, if they think they're having it bad right now, watch out.
All right, so let me just go back just quickly just to underscore something that you said. It seems to me, just as an observer, that Israel, with the attack on October 7th by Hamas, I guess that's not, is that 2 years ago? Was that last?
23. Yeah.
So when that happened, it seems like Israel decided, we're not doing this anymore.
That's right.
Iran is behind this. They have their proxies on Israel's doorstep. Mm-hmm. In Lebanon was Hezbollah, Hamas in the Gaza Strip, the Houthis, you know, in Yemen. So it seems as if Israel decided we're going to take these proxies out,
yeah,
because they continue to attack us. But now, after planning for 10 years with Iran on the doorstep of getting a nuclear weapon, and maybe multiple nuclear weapons, Israel knows their very existence is threatened, not only from a direct launch from Iran, but as you pointed out, if Iran had handed off maybe a suitcase nuke, you know, or some other kind of, you know, dirty bomb or something, it would be very difficult for Israel to stop an attack coming from Hezbollah or, at the time, Hamas. So it seems to me that Israel just decided, well, this is it. We can't live like this.
Yeah.
We're taking out every aspect of Iran's proxy war against our survival.
There's one other element here that's kind of interesting. It's about 1,000 miles from Tel Aviv to Tehran. So Israel launches its fighter jets. That's a long distance for a fighter jet to go all the way,
right,
hit the target, and come back without refueling. I'm not sure how they're doing that right now, but there's some suggestion that maybe Israel's getting some help from Jordan.
Yeah.
Maybe the Saudis, somewhere there.
Both of whom, as nations, helped shoot down some of these,
yes,
rocket and missile barrages from Iran.
Yeah, this is really interesting. Maybe some of the Arab neighbors of Israel are nervous about Iran, too.
I think that's been made clear,
yes,
over the last several years. They don't like Iran's plans, mm-hmm, to become the big dog on the block.
Well, it makes the whole region unstable when you've got an Islamic regime that's always threatening to wipe countries off the face of the earth.
Right.
And we just had President Trump's trip, mm-hmm, to the Middle East, visit the Saudis, visit the folks in Qatar. And, you know, I think when the books are written about this period, there'll be a whole lot more to that President Trump trip than what we're led, yeah, to believe.
Right. And let me just add one other thing, and then, Chris, we're going to let you back in the game,
okay,
here. These other nations, now there is some distinction between the Sunni and Shia,
uh-huh,
angle of it, the Arab versus the Persian angle of it. But countries, I think, like Saudi Arabia and Jordan, here's two other things that I think we need to remember. These, yes, they are Islamic regimes, but they're not radical.
That's right.
Like Iran. And there are players in the Muslim world and in the Middle East who want to radicalize these countries, okay? And these countries, again, like Saudi Arabia and Jordan, they don't want to be radicalized. They point back to the fact that Egypt kicked the Muslim Brotherhood out of their country because they were trying to radicalize the streets. So there's that angle, that these countries don't want Iran being able to radicalize the Arab street. But I would also add that if Iran got a nuclear weapon and detonated it, mm-hmm, in Israel, God forbid, mm-hmm, not only is that destruction visited upon the nation of Israel,
yeah,
but the radiation clouds, mm-hmm, and the other destruction could come over into their own countries. And if Israel is threatened with survival, the rumor is that Israel, if they are threatened with extinction, they're taking everybody else with them.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about the Muslim countries. So all these countries around Israel, a lot of them have several different, they have good motivation,
uh-huh,
to make sure that Israel succeeds in draining some of the threat from Iran, and hope that the people of Iran overthrow the mullahs.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
So something else that relates to all this that has also been a much talked about issue over the weekend is in his discussions with Western media, in at least one interview, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu made it clear that Iran was responsible for some assassination attempts on President Trump. There were at least two attempts on Trump's life when he was running for president. Neither one of them were successful, obviously. But Brett Baer got this claim from Netanyahu over the weekend that Iran was responsible for some assassination attempts on President Trump. Clip two.
Could certainly be the result because the Iran regime is very weak. I think it's basically left with two things. It's plans to have atomic bombs and ballistic missiles. That's basically what Iran has. We decided to act because we saw enough uranium, enriched uranium, for 9 bombs. And all they had to do was weaponize them.
Okay, that's my fault. I didn't have the correct clip. Nonetheless, that was more of Netanyahu saying that Iran was up to no good and somebody had to do something about it. But American security...
By the way, that I'm glad you made the mistake because yes. I didn't know that they had... In Israel's point of view, and again, I go back to what you said, Fred, the Mossad's pretty good, that they had enough for 9 bombs.
Yes. Yeah. I'm pleased to have made that mistake to please you because I made a mistake.
Yeah.
But I'm reading from the New York Post here. American security agencies have never tied the 2 assassination attempts on Trump to Iran, but in a speech in September, Trump did suggest that Iran was behind them. That's from the New York Post.
Well, Fred, now we don't know at this point to what Benjamin Netanyahu was referring. Did he specify that the 2 attempts on Trump's life, those were Iranian plots, or are there maybe some other plots that got foiled?
Yeah, he did not go into, from what I heard, he did not go into, like, exact detail.
Well, those 2 assassination attempts are still very suspicious.
Yes.
There's a lot we haven't been told about what happened in those 2 cases. I'm talking about the one attempt where the bullet, you know, whizzed by Trump's head and got his ear.
Uh-huh.
There's still stuff that we haven't been told and is just strange.
Yeah.
In terms of the phone calls, who this, you know, the fact that no, anyway, well, I don't want to rehash all that, but that would be extraordinary should anybody be able to prove Iran's involvement.
And what's even more interesting about this is that over the weekend, it was reported that Trump was presented Israel's plan to actually take out the Ayatollah, but Trump vetoed that plan. In other words, Israel wanted to just end this today by taking out the head Ayatollah, the guy over there,
Khomeini.
And Trump, who may or may not have had attempts on his life from this country and its regime, said, we don't want to go that far.
Fred, let me just ask you two guys, what do you guys think about the U.S. taking out heads of state? I think that's a really bad precedent. You let the Iranian people take Khomeini out and the mullahs overthrow them. But what do you guys think?
I think it would be a mistake. Mm-hmm. And I think anytime Israel wants to do it, they can.
Yeah.
I think what Israel's hoping for is that the Iranian people, as we were discussing earlier, are going to take this current attack by Israel against the Iranian leadership. They will take that as a mark of encouragement to carry out regime change, that they will rise up, the Iranian people will rise up and end this.
And maybe the military helps out in that.
However, I don't think there is any hesitation on President Trump's part to help Israel carry that out. That is why we have moved our forces in much closer. We're going to be there. We're already helping on the defensive side of things.
Yeah.
And we are there if the Iranians touch any American base in that region.
Trump's already said,
yes,
you're going to find out.
Oh, yeah. I think they would be ready to take the regime out very quickly.
Yeah. I would say it's also not wise for Trump to sign off on something like that. Let the guy, let his people take care of that.
Yeah. All right, quick up, thumbs up or thumbs down, Chris, on targeting Khomeini?
I would not him directly. Don't sign off on that as the U.S. president.
Yeah. All right, folks, tons of stuff to come. We will be talking about here in the next segment the suspected Minnesota shooter. And what happened in that state. Other stuff going on. Obviously, we still have mostly peaceful protests in Los Angeles. I'm just kidding. All kinds of things coming. We're going to take a short break, though. We hope you will return to Today's Issues. You're listening to the American Family Radio Network. We will be right back. This June 24th marks 3 years since Roe v. Wade was overturned. But here's what you may not know. Abortion numbers have surged to a 10-year high. The battleground has shifted from the courtroom to our homes. Today, over 60% of abortions happen through the abortion pill, taken in silence, often alone. Preborn Network clinics are standing in the gap, meeting women in their most desperate hour. And here's what they're seeing. Young mothers, terrified and misled, are delivering their babies, tiny, perfectly formed, onto bathroom floors. These precious babies, once called just tissue, now lie lifeless. 11% of these women who take the abortion pill will suffer serious health complications. Countless others carry emotional scars for a lifetime. When you give to Preborn, you're not just saving a baby, you're saving a mother, too. You're giving her hope, financial support, and the truth. Preborn has already rescued over 350,000 babies, but there are so many more who need our help. Your tax-deductible gift makes this mission possible. To donate now, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby. Or go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. It's Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. By the way, folks, I forgot to tell you, in case you didn't know, it is June 16th, and we are now more than halfway through the month of June. Crazy, crazy fast year.
This weekend will be the official start of summer.
That's right.
Yep.
Although here in Mississippi, where our flagship station is for our network, it seems pretty clear that summer's already begun. But it has. We've had a lot of rain. Been a very rainy spring, so I guess I shouldn't complain. The temperatures have been moderate
so far,
but when summer hits and gets up into the upper 90s, it's pretty miserable here. Anyway, I will proceed to complain about that at some point when that all starts to unfold. All right, Chris, what's next?
Well, this could very well have been the lead story had we not had the war between Israel and Iran that we spent the first 30 minutes talking about. If you didn't hear that, listen to the podcast later today, which will be available on AFR.net. The other story that we need to get into that's still getting national attention, I just saw all the four networks and our television here reporting on this. The man suspected of killing a Minnesota lawmaker and wounding another crawled to officers in surrender on Sunday after they located him in the woods near his home in Minnesota, ending a massive nearly two-day search that put the entire state on edge. Vance Belter was arrested and charged with two counts of murder and two of attempted murder. He's accused of posing as a police officer and fatally shooting former Democratic House Speaker Melissa Hortman and her husband Mark in their home early Saturday in the northern Minneapolis suburbs. Details are still coming in, but this is a very bizarre situation that we are following at AFN.net.
And by the way, that story is at American Family News, AFN.net. Encourage you to go over there and check it out. Lots of great stories and insights on what's happening. This individual, Vance Belter, also allegedly shot Senator John Hoffman, a Democrat, and his wife, Yvette. And they were about 9 miles away, and they have thus far survived, right?
I think that is correct.
I think that Senator Hoffman was in surgeries, I think even over into the evening on the night of the shooting, but the wife was giving reports on it. All right, Fred, what do we know about now? Again, this is alleged shooter Vance Belter, but the law enforcement is making it sound very much like he's the guy. In fact, Democratic Governor Tim Walz said one man's unthinkable actions. So everything seems to be pointing to Belter, but we'll have to wait and see for the official reports on that and probably the trial and whether or not he's confessed to it. What do we know about this situation, the circumstance of the shooting? I doubt there's a manifesto, but everyone who goes out and does these kinds of things here the last 5 years seems to have written a manifesto. Do we have any of that kind of information?
Not really. Let me read you a little bit from the Wall Street Journal coverage of this morning. Belter had built a scattered career that included food companies, retailing, and pastoring, according to public records and his online post.
You mean pastoring a church kind of thing?
Pastoring a church.
Okay.
All right. He has been living with his wife in a rural area outside of the Twin Cities and staying a few nights a week at a rental home in a working-class Minneapolis neighborhood with a couple of roommates. They talked to one of those roommates in the wake of identifying him as the suspect in these shootings. And this roommate supposedly told authorities that Belter had contacted him and said, "I might not see you again," this in advance of the shootings on, I guess it was late Friday night, early Saturday morning. And so it's also on the weekend, somebody sent me a video where Belter is identified as preaching a sermon in the Congo, and he was with some kind of group,
kind of missions group.
Missions group in the Congo. He's also, according to records, been an advocate, a pro-life advocate. So we had a discussion about this in our story meeting this morning, and we should want to warn our listeners, when this starts to come out and is being reported broadly, they're going to try to make a connection that would lead you to believe, here's another pro-life person so radicalized that they're willing to go out and kill Democrats, all right? This is the way the story is going to be framed. There are some reports already describing him as an evangelical Christian.
Right.
All right? So be careful of that. It is, if it is true that he was very involved in the pro-life community, the question should be asked as Christians, how could somebody who speaks out against the taking of unborn life go and do this if he's guilty of
right. This?
So it's beware of this. I think the only thing that is keeping this off the front pages at the moment is the war that's going on between Israel and Iran. There were a couple of other big events on the weekend, the No Kings demonstrations, the military parade in Washington. But the media now will get back into this. And so just beware. They will try to paint this guy as representing radical, those right-wing Christians or a pro-life person. If he is guilty of this, he should be tried to the fullest extent of the law. What he did was, allegedly, we'll keep saying that, and is a suspect in, at 2:30 in the morning, he puts a mask on and walks up to the door of Melissa Hortman and shoots she and her husband point blank, and then proceeds to try to do the same with this other couple, Senator John Hoffman, 60, and his wife, Yvette. Listen, if he's guilty of this, try him to the full extent of the law. I think in Minnesota, it's 40 years is the maximum.
For each felony count.
I think our audience is savvy enough. Don't buy into this idea that, you know, he represents the radical pro-life movement at all. No, this is wrong. If he's guilty of this,
it's premeditated, cold-blooded murder.
That's what it is.
If he did it, yes. Somebody did it.
Yes,
somebody did this and premeditated. And I say premeditated because the Ring camera or whatever security camera caught him at the Hortmans. Mm. He had on this mask. That's premeditation.
And also a police uniform.
Yes.
And a car that looked like a police vehicle.
Yeah. So if Belter is the person who did this, and if he either is or claims to be a Christian, that does not compute.
No.
Christians are not to commit cold-blooded, premeditated murder. You're to allow politics to play as it needs to. And you let the government bear the sword. That's what Paul says in Romans 13. I would also like to just say, and then Chris, let you chime in here. I would also like to say it's unfair and slanderous, in my opinion, for either side to paint with a broad brush and say this person or that person did X, Y, or Z. Therefore, everyone who is identified as the same, whether it be, I don't care if it's LGBTQ or if they're Christian or if they're Muslim, we have to be very careful about painting with too broad a brush. But we're going to see it.
Yes.
And both sides should avoid doing that. Christians especially, because we're not allowed to lie or slander. So if I say Bob over here is a Democrat, therefore he is a murderer and he is a this and he is a that, I am slandering someone and this is a sin. So I think we should make the case that evil is real and evil can exist in any political camp. Yeah. Or any ideological camp or any faith.
Yeah. To your point about one person kind of being the bad apple for the whole bunch here, there were people, like, for example, when Congressman Steve Scalise was shot by the guy who appeared to have been a Bernie Sanders supporter, people came to Bernie Sanders' defense and said, that doesn't mean everybody that votes for or supports Bernie Sanders is crazy. So, I mean, there have been – it needs to be said. It shouldn't need to be said. But
let me also say that the left, a segment of the left, appears to be getting increasingly radicalized. Mm-hmm. I think we can say that without saying every Democrat is a radical. But when we see Antifa and we see the kind of violence that has been going on in Los Angeles and, you know, the summer of love, quote unquote, in 2020, I think we can say that elements of the political left are increasingly radicalized and prone to solving political problems through violence. Mm-hmm. We have polling that indicates that growing numbers of self-identified Democrats think that assassinating Trump is a valid way of getting him out of office. So I don't want to also take the truth out of the discussion, but we should be careful as Christians to not do what the media is soon going to do if Vance Belter turns out to be a pastor and evangelical Christian, et cetera.
Talking about the violence there from the left, the LA riots is still a story in the news. It's going to be kind of bumped to maybe the second segment of any newscast today on the television because of things like Israel and Iran and this Minnesota shooting. I want to bring in something involving the LA riots here for just a second because Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton wrote an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal in which he called for service members, troops, to be brought in to mitigate the LA riots. Some Democrats and news personalities don't like that. Rusty Pugh has been on top of this story for us today on AFN, and he's aired a couple of sound bites, one from Cotton and somebody in response here. Let's begin with Arkansas Senator Tim Cotton being pressed about his op-ed calling for troops to be brought in to mitigate the LA riots. Clip 7.
You referred to it as the threat from the radical left. Given the amount of tension in the country right now, is that really the language to use?
Yes, when you see left-wing street militias who are throwing bricks and frozen water bottles at police officers and shooting them with fireworks.
LAPD says they were handling when things turned violent yesterday.
The LA police chief said last weekend that his forces were overwhelmed and they couldn't manage the situation.
Now, somebody that was brought on to Fox to respond to this was their frequent contributor, Joe Concha, who thought Cotton handled this perfectly. Clip 8.
I mean, let's be clear that Margaret Brennan is arguably the most terribly biased interviewer on broadcast news, if you want to call CBS News even news these days. I mean, dozens of businesses have been looted, vandalized in Los Angeles. We've all seen it over the last 2 weeks. Rioters have tried to murder LAPD officers by dropping large blocks of concrete on their cars from overpasses, which obviously could potentially kill them. And Tom Cotton handled that perfectly. No emotion, completely confident, and the guy was spitting facts. The fact is that we have so many in the media that continue to insist that riots are not happening when our eyes, our ears see the video.
You know, given the fact that American taxpayers are going to be on the hook for helping repair L.A., it's not a bad idea to send in service members to put a stop to this.
Well, Fred, I think your first line of defense should always be local police, county law enforcement. Then you call in the state troopers. But there's nothing wrong with having the National Guard on high alert, ready to be deployed if law enforcement is overwhelmed. I'm not sure, and all presidents have done this. If something happens in terms of a city looking like it might get out of control, well, actually, the Biden administration sometimes hesitated to. But I understand what Senator Cotton is saying, and I also understand that I don't like seeing the military deployed in these kinds of circumstances unless it's your only option, because they're not really trained to be law enforcement.
Yes.
And you put them in a very difficult situation if things turn utterly violent. But sometimes that's the only card you have left to play.
Let's remember how all of this started. We know since President Trump took office once again, and during the election campaign, he said he would make it a priority to bring security back to our borders, to go after people who have entered this country illegally, particularly those who have committed violent crimes. That's just factual.
Right.
So, last week, ICE officials were carrying out some of these raids. Now, the first reports were ICE officials went into a Home Depot in the Los Angeles. That's not true. They gathered near a Home Depot where they knew some illegal immigrants were going to be. I've seen it over the years in California where folks who are in the country illegally kind of stand around because they're hoping to get part-time jobs.
Yes, trying to get work.
Construction.
Trucks come by and pick them up.
That kind of thing. So that's what they were up to. However, what happened was that the ICE agents were being encountered by people opposed to what they were doing. So Governor Newsom wasn't going to call in the National Guard, but President Trump did. He assigned them to go in to protect these quite legal raids.
And ICE facilities.
There were federal buildings that were coming under attack by these protesters. So that's why the National Guard was called in. I think the conversation intensified a bit when the idea of Marines going in
right
on the street. And they actually stayed outside for the longest time. And they were only going to protect the buildings. In other words, stand in front of federal buildings. So we're going to see this kind of thing over and over again. You have the radical left that's going to be out there. You had the No Kings March this right weekend. Mm-hmm. I mean, which was well organized and well funded.
Yes.
Now, it kind of took second place as far as media treatment because, again, of what happened in the Middle East. But they were out there. It was well planned. Even in our local hometown here, there was a little demonstration outside a Republican congressman's office. I happened to drive by because I was curious.
Right.
And they had signs, Trump is a racist, some other things like that, you know.
But that was a peaceful protest.
It was a
no cars burned.
No.
No police officers assaulted.
There was an incident in Utah, I think, and a couple of the other Chicago, I think there was a couple of incidents, that kind of thing. But, you know, it comes down to this. We have roughly 15 to 20 million people who entered this country illegally under Joe Biden. Trump says we have to deal with this.
Right.
Simple as that. We have to round these people up. We either have to encourage them to leave on their own.
Self-deport.
Or we have to deport them. That's the bottom line. Now, the other development on this front on the weekend was that apparently President Trump is having second thoughts about deporting those people who have entered this country illegally many years ago who are working on farms.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or perhaps, you know, some kind of production plants of some type.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting, and we can get into that if you like.
I do have a quote from the president here about that.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go for it.
All right, so this is coming from a Daily Mail story attributing information to the New York Times and something Trump posted on Truth Social last Thursday. For those that are not aware of it, the Trump administration has for the first time pumped the brakes on its mass deportation agenda, telling ICE officials to pause raids on farms, hotels, and restaurants, according to an internal email and three U.S. officials familiar with the situation. On his Truth Social post, Trump said, quote, "Our great farmers and people in the hotel and leisure business have been stating that our very aggressive policy on immigration is taking very good longtime workers away from them, with those jobs being almost impossible to replace. That has led people to believe that Trump is backing away from his, we're going to get rid of illegal immigrants."
Push. Well, Fred, the immigration system in this country has been broken for decades.
Yes.
Going all the way back to President Reagan. Mm-hmm. Who signed an amnesty bill to legalize those who were in the country, who were here, had immigrated illegally. I think at some point you are going to see, I don't know what people think about this in terms of Republicans and Democrats, you will see some people, I think, fast-tracked for citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
But the days of not knowing who's in the country, the days of illegal immigrants getting free health care and welfare and college tuition and subsidies for housing, all that has to end.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have that anymore. The country can't afford it. And other minority groups, they don't want it because those are resources that are being taken away from communities of minorities in this country that are here legally or have been citizens. But there's no doubt that part of our economy we have had people who are in the country illegally who've been doing jobs that probably just aren't going to get done.
Yeah.
Certainly not for what they're getting paid.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen some of these pictures of an entire block of new homes that are being built, residential development, and no work's going on because all the workers were illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because they were getting paid peanuts compared to what you'd have to pay Americans to do. So it's a very complicated issue, and President Trump is just now getting some blowback that might cause him to adjust his policy somewhat.
Isn't it sad that we had to turn to people who have entered the country illegally to fill jobs that should have been filled by Americans?
Yes.
There's another element to this story. There are a lot of Americans who think working on a farm is beneath them.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm getting free medical care.
Yeah.
I have Obamacare. Mm-hmm. And I've got food stamps, and I've got all of these government programs that are taking care of me. Why do I have to go work on a farm?
Because mm-hmm. it is hard work.
Yes, it is.
So,
hey, listen, I have watched crews putting roofs on. They do an excellent job.
Oh yeah,
and they they're up on the roof, mm-hmm. and they take the old shingles off and they put the new ones all in one day.
Yeah.
And they do a great job of it. And you have to scratch your head. Why is it that I'm not seeing a greater array of ethnic background in these workers? And it's because these are the people who are willing to do this.
Right. Yeah.
And the shame of it is, you're right, they're being paid a few bucks to do it. And that's wrong on the company side.
Yes. And listen, in my younger days, I helped friends with roofing.
Mm-hmm.
It is really hard work.
Yeah.
Okay, especially, mm-hmm. yeah. and that was back in the days when I was in shape, playing ball and doing all that kind of stuff. It's really hard work. And listen, I will say this. I know that there are gang members and drug dealers and traffickers that cross the border under Joe Biden from Latin America, okay? But by and large, Hispanics are some of the hardest working people yes. I've ever seen.
Yes.
I mean, it's just extraordinary. And I want to have those kinds of people who will do those jobs. Listen, if your roof leaks, you've got damage, you got to get that done in one day.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have crews who will come in there and just, you know, zip zap and it's done. You got to have folks doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so some adjustment has to be made, but the system is broken. You can't just continue to allow people in who we don't know who they are. And part of that is complicated by the fact that when we compare immigration across our southern border to past waves of immigration that came across the Pacific and across the Atlantic, like both my sides of the family, when Italians and Greeks came over to this country, there was an ocean separating them from home.
Yeah.
They had to assimilate.
Yes.
But you don't have to if you can just run back across that border mm-hmm. and go home mm-hmm. and visit the family and then come back. So we've got to take steps to help folks assimilate once they are here legally.
Yes.
All right, folks. We're going to take a 5-minute break for news. That's right. More news coming directly ahead. If you don't know what's going on, hang on. You're going to find out. When we come back after that break, Steve Jordahl will be joining us. Steve Paisley Jordahl. You're listening to Today's Issues. Hope you join us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.